I wanted someone to be waiting for you.
She didn't know how to process the gratitude she felt. After so many years of bottling emotions, it wasn't easy to open them. Thank you. He stared at her for a moment, and she stared back. Then he said,
Well, let's go,
and started walking toward his car. She automatically fell into step behind him. He stopped, waited for her to catch up. Sorry, she mumbled. She wasn't a prisoner anymore. Old habits, I guess. This time she walked next to him to the blue minivan parked in the lot.
Don't mind the junk in the car, he said, opening the passenger door. It's my wife's car, and she says she never knows what she's going to need, so she never takes anything out.
Lexi climbed up into the passenger seat and stared at the imposing gray of the prison. She snapped her seatbelt into place. It's really nice of you to pick me up, Mr. Jacobs.
Call me Scott, please, he said, pulling out onto the road and away from the prison.
She opened the window and stuck her head out, breathing in the sweet, clean air. The landscape was exactly as she remembered. Towering trees, summer blue sky, distant mountains. Out here, life had gone on without her.
I was sure bummed to hear they added time onto your sentence for bad behavior. I expected to pick you up a while ago.
Yeah, well, 2005 was a bad year. After I lost Gracie, she couldn't even finish the sentence. All of that was behind her now, anyway.
You're better now?
As good as an ex-con can be. I don't do drugs or drink, if that's what you're asking.
I hear you got your degree. Your aunt was so proud.
Sociology, Lexi said, turning her head to stare out the window.
Still dreaming of law school?
Nope.
You're still young, Lexi, he said.
So I hear. She leaned more deeply into the comfortable seat, watching the miles fly past. Soon they were in Port George, driving through the native-owned land, past the fireworks stands that lined the road in early summer. And then they were on the bridge, crossing over Shallow Pass. Welcome to Pine Island, population 7,120. She felt her chest tighten up. There was the entrance to La Riviere Park. The high school. Knight Road. By the time Scott pulled up in front of his office, Lexi's jaw ached.
Are you okay?
Scott asked, opening her door. Get out, Lexi. Smile. If there's one thing you know how to do now, it's fake a smile. She managed it. Thanks, Scott. He handed her $100.
This is from your aunt. And here's a bus ticket to Pompano Beach. The bus leaves tomorrow afternoon at 3:30.
Tomorrow? How was she supposed to keep her distance when she was here, at the scene of her crime, and the only place that had ever felt like home?
Jenny invited you to spend the night and have dinner with us if you'd like, Scott said.
No. She said it too quickly and realized her mistake. Sorry, I don't mean to be rude. It's just that I've been around people for a long time, 2,088 and a half days. She smiled tiredly and looked around, anxious to be on her own.
Aren't you going to ask me?
Scott said. Lexi wanted to shake her head, maybe even say hell no, but she just stood there.
She lives with her dad in the old tamarind cabin on Cove Road. I see her every now and then in town with her dad.
Lexi didn't react. In prison, she'd learned to hide everything, especially pain. Does she look happy?
She looks healthy.
Lexi nodded. That's good. Well, Scott,
we could fight for her, Lexi. Partial custody, or at least visitation rights.
Lexi remembered visitations with her mom, the two of them in a room while a social worker looked on. What Lexi remembered about those rare days was how scared she was of the woman who'd borne her. I'm a 24-year-old ex-con whose last real job was part-time at an ice cream shop. I have no place to live, and I doubt like hell I'll be hired at any decent job. But I should swoop in and see my daughter, wedge myself into the Faraday family again, and bring up all that pain so that I can feel happier? Is that it? Lexi, I won't be like my mother. I won't make any decision that isn't in my daughter's best interest. That's why I'm going to Florida tomorrow. Grace deserves better than me, and if I'm around, she'll love me anyway. That's what kids do. They love loser parents, and it breaks their hearts.
You're not a loser. And what's wrong with her loving you?
Don't. Scott pursed his lips. Reaching into his pocket, he pulled out a set of keys and extracted one.
This is the key to my office. There's a sofa bed in the conference room and a bike by the front door. The combination is 1321. We closed up early today, so the place is all yours.
She took the key and pocketed it. Thank you, Scott.
No problem. I believe in you, Lexi.
She should have walked away then, said nothing more. That was what she meant to do. Instead, she found herself looking up at him saying, Did Zach get married?
No. He's still in school, I think. No wife. He lived with his parents for a few years and then moved into that cabin on the cove.
Oh.
He never wrote?
A few times. I sent all the letters back unopened.
Oh, Lexi,
Scott said, sighing.
Why?
She crossed her arms, trying not to remember the feel of those letters in her fingers, the sight of them on the rough gray wool of her blanket. But she'd been so angry then, so wounded. She'd acted out in all kinds of terrible ways. By the time she was past all of that, stronger, it was too late. He never wrote again, and she hadn't had the courage to write to him. I should have taken your advice, Lexi finally said, unable to look at Scott as she said it.
Yes.
Well, thanks again. I think I'll go for a bike ride. It's a beautiful day. Scott went over to the front door of his office, got the bike, and guided it back to her.
Good luck in Florida, Lexi. Start a new life.
She wanted to tell him how much it had meant to her, him being there today. For years she'd prepared to be all alone when she got out of prison, and she saw now how painful that would have been. Scott,
You're welcome, he said quietly.
She nodded one last time and took the bike from him and rode away. Soon she was smiling in spite of herself. It felt so good to be free, to turn when she felt like it and go where she wanted. She would never take this for granted. She spun by the theater, saw that they'd added on to it, and the bank, and the pharmacy where Aunt Eva had bought her prescriptions. There, she saw a payphone. After a quick signal, she turned into the parking lot and called Eva, collect. There was no answer. Disappointed, she climbed back onto the bike and started pedaling. The ice cream shop was still there. Beside it was a new coffee shop and computer repair place. When she came to the high school, she slowed down. A big new gymnasium dominated the campus. It looked nothing like she remembered, except that the flagpole was still there. And that was enough.
Meet me at the flagpole, Lexter. Don't be late.
She pedaled harder, down the bumpy asphalt road and up Raspberry Hill. Out here, there were occasional dirt roads and the odd mailbox, but mostly it was forested. Sunset was nearing, and the sky was a deep midnight color. And before she knew it, she was on Knight Road. She hadn't even meant to turn here. But here she was, at the hairpin turn. The skid marks were long gone, but the broken tree remained, its pinkish flesh, almost black now, dying. She came to a stop and half stumbled off the bike, hearing it clatter to the pavement behind her. On either side of her, trees blocked out the sun. The memorial to Mia was tattered now, only visible if you knew what to look for. The small white cross had been grayed by the changing seasons and stood drunkenly to the left. Here and there, empty vases lay in the bushes. An old, airless balloon hung limply on a high branch. She released her breath in a long, shaky sigh. In prison, she'd spent years in group therapy, talking about the pain, the remorse. Her counselor had told her often that time and hard work would heal her, that she would be whole when she could forgive herself. As if. Even if she could forgive herself, which was inconceivable, it wouldn't bring Mia back. That was what all those positive thinkers didn't get. Some things could never be made right. If Lexi became Mother Teresa, Mia would still be dead, and it would still be Lexi's fault. It had been 6 years, and still Lexi prayed to Mia every night. Every morning she woke to a split second of joy, and then the pulverizing truth. It was that sense of loss that had caused her to turn to Valium for a few years. But ultimately, she discovered the truth. You could run from your pain, but you couldn't hide. It was something she should have known already, a lesson she should have learned from her mother. When she realized the ugly truth, that she was becoming her mother, she quit taking the Valium. She was so clean now she hardly even took aspirin. The only real answer lay in the courage to see a thing clearly and try to do better, be better. She knelt there a long time, on the cold, hard roadside, knowing it was dangerous to be stopped on this curve, and not caring. If anyone saw her here. Finally, she got back on the bike and started to ride. She almost sped right past the Faraday house, but at the last minute, she stopped. Even in the falling darkness, she could see how different the place looked. The garden was untended. The planter boxes were empty. She saw the mailbox. Their name was still on it. When a pair of headlights shone at her, she jumped on the bike and rode away. From a safe distance, she watched a silver Porsche turn into the driveway behind her. Miles. Sighing, she rode back into town and bought dinner at a fast food place. At Scott's office, she locked up the bike and went inside through the back door. In the conference room, she found a red floral sofa bed with a neat pile of white sheets set on the cushion. Beside the sheets lay a manila envelope. She picked up the envelope. Below it, stuck to the cushion, was a pink post-it note. Lexi. She's in kindergarten. Morning class. FYI. S. She opened the manila folder and found a single photograph. There, smiling up at her, was an elfin blonde-haired girl in a pink blouse. Her daughter. Man plans, God laughs. Lexi understood that sentence for the first time. She had planned her release from prison down to the smallest detail. She talked about her plans in group and told Tamika everything. She had intended to go to Florida and move in with Eva and Barbara and start looking for a job. She'd even dreamed of graduate school. She would make a good social worker. Maybe she could help girls in trouble. It hadn't occurred to her that once she left the razor wire behind, she would be back in a world where unexpected things happened. Who would have thought she'd end up here, on Pine Island, the only place in the world she didn't want to be? She opened the sofa bed and crawled between the softest sheets she'd ever felt. Pale light from an outside street lamp fell through the window, lighting the dark room. She closed her eyes and tried to will herself to sleep. But it was so quiet, and she would have sworn that the picture of Grace was breathing. For 6 years, she'd ruthlessly suppressed all thoughts of her daughter. She walked away when Tamika mentioned her daughter, and turned away when the TV screen showed images of little girls running into their mother's arms. She told herself she didn't deserve Grace, that Grace deserved the kind of life that Lexi could never offer. But now, in the dark, with a photograph beside her, she felt that resolve weaken. She slept fitfully, dreaming dreams that were best forgotten. Finally, at 6 o'clock, she threw the covers back. Padding barefooted to the bathroom, she was surprised to find a shower. She took her first private shower in years and dried off with a soft white towel. Her reflection afterward showed a face that was pointed and thin, like a drowned rat, framed by wispy black curls. Towel drying her hair, she dressed in the courtroom clothes that were all she had and went in search of breakfast, which she found at a local diner. Still, the photograph in her purse kept breathing. Sometimes she heard a giggle, and irrationally, she thought it came from the bag. After breakfast, she walked up Main Street and found a local thrift shop that was just opening its door for the day. She used $7 to buy a pair of second-hand Bermuda shorts, a blue t-shirt that had a dragonfly stenciled on the front, and an aqua cotton hoodie. She traded her black flats for a pair of flip-flops and threw the knee socks away. Walking out of the store, she smiled, feeling really free for the first time. She had a bus ticket to Florida in her pocket. In no time at all, just 7.5 hours from now, she'd be on her way out of here. A yellow smear moved in a gust of black exhaust. A school bus. Small faces peered out from the windows. Lexi didn't make a conscious decision to follow the bus. Rather, she just kept walking. On Turnagain Way, she angled left and walked up the hill. By the time she reached the four-way stop, there were kids all around, laughing and talking and dragging ridiculously big backpacks on the sidewalk beside them. There were mothers everywhere, too, monitoring crosswalks and conversations and movement. A line of buses was parked in front of the elementary school. The carpool lane ran through a row of parked cars, parents dropping their kids off. A black SUV pulled past her and stopped. Lexi's breath caught. From her place by the tree, she saw Jude get out of the SUV and go to the back passenger door, opening it wide. And there, sitting in a big car seat, was a miniature version of Mia, with buoyant corn-silk blonde hair and a heart-shaped face. Lexi inched sideways for a better view, making sure she was partially hidden within the crowd of schoolchildren. Jude helped Grace out of the car and stepped back. Grace didn't smile, and Jude didn't give her a kiss. And then Grace walked away, alone. Lexi frowned. She couldn't help remembering how it had been before, when Jude had driven Mia and Lexi to school. The kisses, the hugs, the game show contestant waves goodbye. Maybe Jude was having a bad day, or Grace had just said a bad word or gotten in trouble. Or maybe Grace had asked not to be kissed in public, and Jude snuggled with her before they got in the car. Lexi hardly noticed when the Escalade started to move again. By the time she reached the crosswalk, the big SUV was in the line of cars exiting the school grounds. But Lexi wasn't looking there. All of her attention was focused on the little girl in the yellow t-shirt wearing a ridiculously big Hannah Montana backpack. Her shoulders were slumped, and she moved reluctantly toward the school, dragging her feet. No one talked to Grace as she walked into the school and then disappeared. Moments later, the bell rang, and the few remaining students ran for the school doors. Lexi stood on the patch of grass between the bus lane and the carpool lane, staring at the now quiet brick grade school. She's in kindergarten, morning class. She had walked alone into too many schools herself, with no one waving goodbye, no one coming to pick her up. She remembered how alone she'd felt at lunchtime. Alone. That was what Lexi remembered most about her early childhood. She had always felt alone, a stranger in someone else's family, an outsider in some new school. Even after Eva, Lexi had never quite felt enfolded in a family. Until she'd met the Faradays. From that first day of ninth grade, when she'd met Mia and come home with her, Lexi had felt welcomed into their midst. That was why she'd given them custody of Grace, so her daughter would know how it felt to be loved. Lexi looked down at her watch. It was not quite 9 o'clock. How long did morning kindergarten last? 2 hours? 3? The bus for Florida didn't leave until 3:30. That gave her several hours with nothing to do. She could ride her bike around town, or get something to eat, or go to the library and read. But even as she ran through the list of things she could do, she knew there was only one thing she wanted to do. "Don't do it. You made your choice. Think of Grace." The arguments rifled through her thoughts, but she paid them no mind. She couldn't. Not this time. For the past 5 years and 3 months, every day of her daughter's life, she'd pictured Grace happy and well-adjusted, loved and adored. That Grace she could make herself walk away from. But this little girl, with her draggy feet and slumped shoulders, this little girl didn't look happy. "She is, though," Lexi said aloud. "Anyone can have a bad day." Still, she walked around the school, up past the portables, to the big playground out back. Here, confined within chain-link fences, were the elementary school play yard, basketball hoops and paved pads, and grassy areas, and a baseball diamond. She found a giant evergreen shadowing a patch of grass. There, she sat down and waited. As the minutes passed, she told herself she'd misinterpreted what she'd seen, imposed her own sad school history on Grace. Her daughter was a happy girl. She had to be. The Faradays were the Bradys for a new generation. No one lived in the Brady house and felt lonely or unloved. She'd prove it to herself and then be on her way. Around 10:30, a bell rang. The big double doors banged open, and a herd of small kids ran out onto the playground. Kindergarten recess. It was obvious. There were only about 30 kids, and they were so small. A pretty brunette woman in jeans and a red blouse supervised their play. Lexi got to her feet, moving along the fence line. Grace was the last one to come out of the school. She stood off to the side, alone. She seemed to be talking to herself, to the back of her hand, actually. The other kids laughed and played and ran around. Grace just stood there, talking to her watch. "Smile," Lexi thought. "Please." But Grace never smiled, not once, during that 10-minute recess. None of the kids talked to her, and she didn't join into any of the games. "No one likes her," Lexi thought, with a stab in her chest. "Gracie," she whispered, shaking her head. Across the playground, Grace looked up, although she couldn't possibly have heard her name spoken aloud. Lexi felt that look pierce her. Unable to help herself, she waved. Grace looked behind her. Seeing no one there, she turned back to Lexi. Slowly, she smiled and shyly waved back. Then the bell rang, and she ran back into the school. Lexi could have lied to herself then, could have made up stories, or tried harder not to care. But she didn't bother with any of that. She didn't want to rush to judgment, didn't want to make a terrible mistake. Again. But neither could she ignore what she'd seen. Grace wasn't happy. No. Grace might be unhappy, and that changed everything. There would be an empty seat on the Florida-bound bus today. Chapter 20. Grace sat in the back seat of the car, feeling very small.
How was school today? Nana asked without looking in the rearview mirror.
Okay, I guess.
Did you make any new friends? Grace hated that question. Her grandmother asked it all the time.
I am the queen of kindergarten. Allison Shunt is making me a crown.
Really? That's wonderful.
I guess.
Grace sighed. It was wonderful for Stephanie, who really was the queen of the kindergarten. She stared down into the little magic mirror on her wrist, wishing Ariel would come to visit her, but the circle was blank.
Ariel,
she mouthed.
I'm lonely.
Nothing. Grace sighed heavily. She rested her head on the car seat's fluffy side and stared out the window, watching the big green trees blur past. They drove up one street and down another and around a big corner, and then they were home. Nana drove carefully down the dirt driveway to the cabin. Grace waited patiently to be let out of her car seat, and once freed, she grabbed her big backpack and followed Nana up the gravel path to their front door. Inside, she heard Nana mutter something under her breath and start picking up stuff. She didn't like Daddy to leave clothes lying around, and she hated Gracie's toys. Grace turned on the TV and climbed up onto the big sofa to wait for her Daddy. When Nana wasn't looking, she sucked her thumb. She knew it was a babyish thing to do, but Nana made her nervous, and sucking her thumb helped.
Grace?
Nana said. Grace pulled the thumb out of her mouth.
I wasn't sucking my thumb. I was biting my fingernail. Is that bad, too?
Nana frowned, and Grace felt her heart beat faster again. A sick feeling settled in her tummy. Nana came closer. There's nothing wrong with sucking your thumb, Grace. Her voice was sweet and silky, like honey, and Grace felt herself starting to smile.
Really?
Maybe I should try it.
Grace giggled. It makes me feel better.
God knows that's a good thing.
You said there was no God. That's what you told Daddy when he wanted to go to the cemetery.
Nana's smile faded. I'm going to make dinner now. Grace knew immediately that she'd done something bad again. She wanted to suck her thumb, but instead, she dragged her blanket into her lap and sat there, watching Nana cook. No one said anything for the longest time. Grace kept looking down at her wrist mirror, whispering Ariel's name, but her friend was gone. For the next hour, it was just Grace and her grandmother, together in this small house, hardly ever talking. Then, finally, Daddy was home. Grace heard his car drive up, saw the headlights flash light into the house. She jumped down from the sofa and ran for the front door.
Daddy!
She yelled when he came into the house. He dropped his big backpack and scooped her into his arms. Just like that, her world righted itself. He kissed her cheek.
How's my girl?
I'm good, Daddy.
He smiled at that, but she could see how tired he was. His eyelids were kind of saggy, and he'd forgotten to comb his hair again today.
Hey, Mom, he said. Something smells good.
Nana came into the room. She was wiping her hands on a towel, but that was stupid because she never made a mess or got dirty. Meatloaf and au gratin potatoes. The salad is in the fridge.
You didn't have to do that,
he said, starting to loosen his hold on Grace. She clung to him like a cobweb.
I love you, Daddy,
she said.
I love you too, Princess.
Nana came closer. She peered at Daddy, her pretty face turning into another frown.
You aren't sleeping.
Finals, he said.
Grace didn't understand. Of course he wasn't sleeping. He just got home.
Are we going to play rodeo tonight, Daddy?
That was her favorite. She got to ride on his back while he bucked her high into the air.
Maybe Grace should stay with us tonight, Nana said.
Grace tightened her hold on her Daddy.
I won't bother you, Daddy. I promise. I'll let you study.
Thanks, Mom, Daddy said. But we're good.
Nana gave him a long, steady look, and then shrugged.
Okay.
I'll be here before 8 to pick her up. Don't stay up too late. Grace felt a rush of relief when Nana was gone. She didn't quite know why, but her grandmother scared her. It was like when you were playing with someone's extra special toy. You were always afraid you were going to accidentally break it. She looked at her daddy and saw how tired he looked. She hated when he got quiet.
They made me the queen of kindergarten, she said, hoping to make him proud.
Even after you punched Austin?
No one likes him, Daddy. They were glad I punched him.
What is it? The Lord of the Flies daycare?
Huh?
He carried her over to the sofa and sat down. She snuggled up to him, resting against his chest. This was her favorite place in the whole world. The only time she ever felt safe was when he was holding her.
Why did they make you queen?
She scrunched her face in thought. Then she remembered Charlie and the chocolate factory. Charlie got to be the winner because he was the nicest boy.
I saved Brittany from drowning. She went in too deep, so I saved her.
Saved Brittany from drowning, he said, staring down at her.
She felt her cheeks grow hot. How come lies just popped out of her mouth like little soap bubbles? She couldn't help it. No wonder no one liked her. Daddy touched her cheek.
You know, Grace, when I was a kid, I thought I had to do everything right. Go to the right school, get the right grades, follow the rules. I wanted to make my mom and my sister proud of me.
He looked away. For a long time, he was quiet, and the silence made her heart hurt. Had she said the wrong thing again? Finally, he cleared his throat and said,
The point is, I'm proud of you just the way you are. I love you no matter what, Gracie. You can take that to the bank.
She didn't know what he meant. She hated the bank, except for the strawberry candies they gave out, and she knew the rest of it wasn't true. Once, she'd heard Papa tell Daddy that Grace was having trouble in school. Behavioral problems and no friends were the words she'd heard through the door. Her daddy had said a really bad word and asked Papa when they all just got to be happy again. He wanted her to have friends. It was important to him.
I'm popular, Daddy. I can't hardly finish my lunch because everyone is talking to me so much.
He leaned down and kissed her cheek.
Okay, princess, he said with a sigh. Okay. Now let's have something to eat before I pass out.
I made the meatloaf, Grace said, smiling proudly at him.
Her dad's smile was sad, and that scared her so much, she added,
And potatoes!
He kissed her again and got up.
Come on, Gracie, let's eat.
She hurried along behind him, trying to keep up. Once again, Jude had awakened too early. There was no light bleeding through the louvered blinds in her bedroom, but she could feel dawn on the horizon, like an army gathering before a charge. Beside her, she felt Miles move in his sleep. He turned toward her, took her in his arms, his breath a warm caress against the back of her neck. She rolled over and snuggled close to him, slid her bare leg between his. His eyes opened slowly, lazily, and he smiled. He leaned closer, kissed her lightly at first, then more passionately. His hands slid down her silky nightgown and found the lacy hem, then bunched it, dragged it up, up, until she was naked. He took off his boxer shorts and threw them aside. She followed the lead of his desire, touched him the way he liked, arching into his hand until she had to have him inside of her. When she came, it was an explosion of feeling from somewhere deep inside of her. She cried out so loudly, it embarrassed her. And when she collapsed beside him, She was trembling. They never spoke about this new passion of theirs. She knew that he, like she, was afraid that words would jinx it. For so many years after their loss, sex had simply been gone, like smiles and laughter. Its return had surprised both of them. Somehow, they'd learned to connect by touch, to communicate their love almost solely without words. It wasn't the A answer, wasn't enough for Miles, whom she still caught looking at her with infinite sadness most of the time. But it was what they had now, and she knew how lucky they were to have it. She kissed him lightly and drew back. Reaching down for her nightgown, she slipped it back on and got out of bed. At the windows, she stopped and twisted the shade's rod, letting the light stream in. To her left was the garden she'd given up on. It was a riotous mess of flowers and branches and leaves, without order or care. Ugly. Miles came up beside her, kissed her shoulder.
"What are you doing today?"
"I thought I'd go to Zach's. He seems stressed out."
"I was stressed out second year, and I wasn't a 24-year-old single dad."
He squeezed her upper arm.
"Why don't we bring Gracie over for the day? Zach can come here when he's done. We can play a game. We still have that Candyland around here somewhere, don't we?"
Jude saw their reflections in the window. Watery, pencil-drawing-like shapes. At the word Candyland, time fell away. She was a young mother again, hunkered down on the floor with her twins, reaching for a card, laughing. She slipped out of Miles's arms and went into the bathroom. She was out of her nightgown and into the shower before he could get to her.
"I forgot," he said,
standing in the doorway, giving her that disappointed look again.
"I shouldn't have said that."
"Don't be silly. It's just a game." Her voice barely cracked, but she knew it betrayed her. There was a pause before he said,
"I'll go for a run and meet you at Zach's."
"You run too much," she said. He shrugged. It was his way of dealing with the loss. He ran. He worked. "See you later," she said finally. She stayed in the shower until she heard him leave, and then she got out and began drying her hair. By the time she'd dressed in a pair of pale beige capris and a soft cotton t-shirt, she was in control of her emotions again. Grief was like that these days, a stealth bomber. She could be going along just fine, moving forward, and then something would shove her off track. Years ago, when it had all been fresh, she could spend days off the path, in a gray world where nothing was stable. Now she could right herself most of the time. That was progress. She started to leave the bathroom and remembered halfway to the door that she hadn't brushed her teeth or put on makeup. She went back and brushed her teeth, but decided to forgo the makeup. She'd only have to remove it tonight, and nothing left her more wrung out than a day with Grace and Zach. It took so much effort to be present in their lives without really being present that she came home exhausted. She went to her car, a black hybrid SUV, smaller than the old Escalade, and started the engine. Backing out of the garage, she executed a tight 3-point turn and drove up the gravel driveway, noticing the wildness of their land. Everything had grown in the past few years. Blackberry bushes climbed like bullies over everything. She turned onto the road and drove to Zach's house. As always, walking into this cabin was a little like going back in time for Jude. The blue sofa was the one she and Miles had gotten for their first apartment. The chairs were from the year they'd had the twins. They'd stored all of their old furniture and outdated trinkets for their kids. They used to say jokingly, "With two moving out, we'll need to save it all." Zach was raising his daughter and going to med school, in a house that mirrored the one in which she and Miles had done all the same things. "Anyone here?" she called out. Zach came around the corner from the kitchen, holding a cup of coffee and carrying Grace, who clung sleepily to him.
Don't say it,
Zack said, rubbing Grace's back.
I know I look like shit. I was up until 4. Can you guys watch Gracie today? I have study group.
Of course.
Thanks. I can be home by 7.
Jude nodded and went into the kitchen, where she started cooking breakfast. Because she kept Zack's house stocked with food, she knew she'd find everything she needed for waffles, scrambled eggs, and a fruit plate. When Miles got there, hair still wet from his shower, and smiling in the way that only he among them still could, Jude felt a weight slide off her shoulders. Miles was the glue that held their lives together. Around him, Jude and Zack breathed easier.
There's my girl,
Miles said, opening his arms wide. Zack put Grace down and she ran for her grandfather, hurled her little pink polka-dot flanneled body at him. Miles scooped her up and whispered something in her ear, and she giggled. Jude felt a spasm in her chest. There were times, like this, when all that she'd lost hit her so hard she had trouble standing.
Let's eat while it's hot, she said tightly.
Yummy!
Grace said, scampering out of Miles's arms and running for the table. As always, she sat next to a blank spot and an extra place setting. That was the place for her invisible friend, the alien princess trapped in a jar.
So, how's the clinical stuff going?
Miles asked Zack when he sat down.
I love the clinical. Diagnosing is awesome, but pharmacokinetics? That stuff is kicking my ass,
Zack answered, scooping eggs onto his daughter's plate. Miles reached over to stab a waffle with his fork.
Pathology was my downfall 2nd year. I don't know why. You just have to get through it all with the knowledge. 3rd year is when you really get into it.
Jude watched the way her son buttered Grace's waffle while he talked to his father, how he cut it up into small pieces for her and put her napkin in her lap. And she was so proud of him that she thought for the first time, we're all going to be okay. Someday, we'll be laughing again. She found herself smiling at the unexpected idea of happiness, of a future together. She listened to one of Zack's stories about diagnosing some terrible disease and how he'd screwed up, and she laughed along with her husband and son. After breakfast was over, the unanticipated sense of lightness remained. Jude sent Zack off to the UW with a kiss on the cheek and a hug that was so fierce he actually frowned at her.
Go on. We'll have fun today, she said. Thanks, Mom,
Zack said.
No problema,
she answered without thinking. At the silly reminder of who they'd been, she fell silent. And then he was grabbing his backpack and heading out the door.
Papa, can I go to my playhouse?
Grace asked.
Put on your clothes and brush your teeth first,
Miles said distractedly. He was looking for the TV remote. When he found it, the screen thumped to life, and a baseball game filled the screen. Miles flopped onto their old sofa and put his feet up on the coffee table. While Jude washed the dishes, she saw a yellow flash blur past her. Stay away from the water, Gracie.
Arielle and me are just gonna play Barbies in the playhouse, Grace answered, grunting to open the sliding glass door.
Arielle and I, Jude said automatically.
Miles, do the ordinary rules of grammar apply to imaginary friends? He said,
Huh? What was that, babe?
Jude went back to washing the dishes. She heard the sliding door thump shut, and she glanced to the left. Outside, Grace ran nimbly across the yard toward the pink and yellow princess playhouse Santa had brought her last year. It was positioned just beyond the deck, on a patch of grass that looked out over the gray sand beach.
Come on, hurry!
Grace was yelling to her imaginary friend. Jude washed up the dishes, then dried them and put them away. When she was finished, she glanced out at Grace again. She could see her granddaughter through the plastic castle's open window. She was talking to the air while she made Barbie dance.
You going out to the Magic Kingdom? Jude asked Miles.
In a sec. I just want to see this play.
Okay. I'm going to make them a chicken casserole for dinner. Jude decided on the spot. She didn't want Zack to be hungry when he got home from studying. She moved through the familiar family recipe with almost no effort. Every few minutes she looked up to make sure that Grace was okay, and then she went back to work. When the casserole was in the fridge, along with a note about cooking it, she cleaned up the kitchen again and then headed into the living room. She was about to say something to Miles when a flash of movement caught her eye. She opened the sliding glass door and stepped out onto the weathered deck. It was a beautiful June day, with sharp blue skies and no clouds. To the right of the property was a thick stand of evergreens that blocked the view of the neighboring house. Grace was standing by the trees. Beside her stood a girl dressed in faded shorts and a blue t-shirt. Was it Mildred's daughter from next door? Was she home from college? Then the girl turned, and Jude saw her face. Jude's heart started beating so fast she couldn't breathe. A sick, sour taste flooded her mouth, and she thought she was going to vomit. She reached out to the sliding glass door to steady herself, and was about to call for her husband when pain exploded in her chest. It hurt so bad she couldn't think, couldn't move, couldn't do anything except plaster her hand over her heart and fall to her knees. Lexi rode down to La Riviere Park. As she got off the bike and looked out over the gray sand beach with its mounds of silvered driftwood tangled along the shore, she was assailed by memories. She locked her bike into the rack and then moved past the driftwood, remembering the first time Zack had told her he loved her. They'd been right there. She walked down to the pebbled beach. Here, the stones were polished to glassy perfection by the waves. She walked along the beach, her flip-flops sliding on the smooth rocks. Counting the houses, she knew when she reached her destination. There it was, the old tamarind cabin. There had been a party here once, back in her junior year of high school. Jude had never found out about that one. Tall cedar trees ran in a thick line along one side of the property. To their right, on the lot next door, she saw a colorful plastic castle playhouse, complete with a pointed gray turret and bright pink pennant. Beside it, perched like a baby bird at the end of the gray deck, sat a little girl dressed in yellow. She was talking to her wrist again. Lexi approached her daughter slowly, taking care to stay hidden by the trees. The last thing she wanted was for Zack to come storming out of the house like a Nazgul, telling her to get the hell away from his daughter. Really, all Lexi wanted was to make sure that Grace was happy. Everything could go on as planned as long as Grace was happy. She started to say hey, but her voice caught. She cleared her throat and tried again.
Hey, Grace. I'm not supposed to talk to strangers.
I'm not a stranger, Gracie. I've known you all your life.
Oh.
Grace cocked her face to the right, studying Lexi. Her lips pursed.
I saw you at school.
Yes. It took everything Lexi had inside of her just to stand there. She wanted to fling herself at Grace and hold her in her arms and beg for forgiveness. Still, she took care to stand in the shade of the trees, out of the house's view.
You waved. How come?
Lexi took a step closer. Her heart was taking flight.
I knew you when you were a baby. Do you know my daddy?
She nodded. Grace's face scrunched up.
Prove it. Does he still like chocolate chip mint ice cream and hate anything that looks like a comb?
Grace giggled and immediately covered her mouth to stifle the sound.
Nana says his hair looks like a beetle, which is funny because beetles are gross, especially the ones who live on poop.
Lexi battled a smile. Can I stand by you?
Sure.
Lexi moved closer, stood beside a huge tree. How come you're out here all alone?
Grace's little face drooped.
My daddy is gone. Again. Nana's in the kitchen.
Does your grandma still dance while she cooks? Grace frowned up at her.
She hates me.
Your grandma Jude hates you?
I look like her.
A chill crept down Lexi's spine. Her?
Daddy's dead sister. That's why Nana never looks at me. I'm not supposed to know that, but I do.
Lexi sat down in the cold, cold sand. Really?
She was murdered by pirates. That's why no one talks about it.
Grace sighed.
My daddy sometimes cries when he looks at me, too.
You do look like Mia, Lexi said quietly.
You knew Daddy's sister?
I did, Lexi said quietly. She was...
Hey, do you have a dog?
Lexi was startled by the change in subject. No, I've never had one.
I want a dog, or maybe a chipmunk.
Have you asked your dad for a pet?
We had rattlesnake for dinner last night, with peanuts.
Something was going on here. Grace was throwing stuff at her, but why? Had the talk of Zack's emotions scared her? Lexi said the only thing she could think of. I ate ostrich once.
Wow.
So, your daddy's not here?
Nope. I'm a big girl. I get to stay home alone all the time. I can take my own bath and everything. Last night, I made dinner all by myself.
Does he go out a lot? Grace nodded. Lexi studied her daughter's gorgeous face with its sad green eyes and pale skin and wondered if she'd left any mark on this girl at all. Do you have any friends at school?
Friends?
Grace said, then grinned.
Tons. I'm the most popular girl in the class.
You're lucky. I was lonely sometimes in school, Lexi said, watching her daughter closely. She couldn't help herself. She took a step closer. Grace's lips trembled a little.
I don't have...
Grace! Someone yelled sharply. Get in here! Now!
Lexi jumped back into the trees. Peering around a shaggy green branch, she saw the cabin. The sliding glass door was open, and Miles stood there, frowning. He hadn't seen Lexi, she was sure of it. So why did he sound so pissed?
Grace, damn it! He yelled again. Get in here, now!
Gotta go.
Grace popped to her feet. Does he always yell at you like that? Grace started to turn away. But Lexi dared to reach out and take hold of her girl's hand. I'd like to be your friend, she said softly. It was hard to stop there. Suddenly, there was so much more she had to say. She'd been a fool for thinking she could walk away from her daughter. A smile broke over Grace's face, its brightness warming Lexi.
Okay, bye,
Grace said, waving. Then she turned and ran back for the house. Lexi got up slowly. She understood at last now how it felt to stop running. She walked back to her bike, climbed aboard, and pedaled hard up the hill toward town. An ambulance passed her, lights flashing, siren blaring, but she hardly noticed. She was on her way to see Scott Jacobs.
Chapter 21 Jude was in the emergency ward of Seattle Hope. She lay in a narrow bed, connected to all kinds of monitors and machines and alarms. But it was all unnecessary. She hadn't had a heart attack. She looked up at her husband, feeling foolishly fragile. She'd broken so easily, again. I thought all of that was behind me. He stroked the sweat-dampened hair away from her face.
So did I.
Panic attack. She practically spit the words out. Grace climbed up the metal bed rails. She slipped and plopped back to the floor, then climbed up again. The rattling clang reverberated through Jude's tense body, made a headache blossom at the base of her skull.
"What's panic?"
she said, banging her chin against the bed rail.
"It means you're scared," Miles said.
"I saw a beach rat once. It was scary," Grace said. "And those big hairy black spiders are scary. Did one crawl up your leg?"
"Nana's really tired, Gracie," Miles said. "Why don't you read that book over there for a minute?"
"But I want to know what scared Nana."
"Not now, Gracie. Okay?" he said gently.
"Is it like when I had chicken pox and I just wanted sleep?"
"Exactly."
"Okay, Papa."
Grace slid down the side of the bed and shuffled over to the chair in the corner and sat down. She opened a tattered copy of The Cat in the Hat and tried to sound out the words. Jude felt bad, shaky, headachy, sick to her stomach. "I'm losing it, Miles."
"What do you mean?"
She loved the strong, steady movement of his hand through her hair. It calmed her more than any medication could. "I thought I saw her."
"Mia?"
he whispered. "No." Jude couldn't help feeling disappointed by the question. She'd tried to see Mia. Neither psychics nor prayers had worked. And certainly, seeing Mia wouldn't cause Jude to think she was having heart failure. The opposite would be true. Such a vision would restart her heart. She glanced sideways, saw that Grace was absorbed by the challenge of reading.
"Lexi,"
Jude whispered. It was the first time she'd said the name aloud in years. She was talking to Gracie. Miles took her hand in his. He didn't look at all ruffled by her admission, and his calm reassured her.
"It's common to experience dreamlike sensations or perceptual distortions during a panic attack. You know that. Remember that time you thought a car was going to hit Grace? If I hadn't been there, you would have killed yourself running out into traffic."
"This wasn't like that," Jude said. But even as she said it, she questioned herself. So many weird things had happened to her since Mia's death. But she was sure she'd seen Lexi. Her hair was short and curly, and she was really thin.
"It wasn't Lexi," Miles said evenly.
She loved how certain he sounded. Sometimes Miles's certainty made Jude want to gouge his eyes out, but now she wanted to share his calm. "How can you be so sure?"
"Her sentence was up on December 15th, last year. Remember how tense we all were, waiting to see if she would show up here?"
Tense was an understatement. Jude had spent all of last December strung tighter than a tripwire. Each day after Lexi's scheduled release had filled Jude with dread. It wasn't until mid-January that she had begun to relax. Miles had wanted to call the state and track Lexi's movements, but Jude had been adamant about no contact whatsoever. She hadn't wanted anyone in their family to even say Lexi's name aloud, let alone find out where she'd gone.
"She didn't show, didn't call or send a note, and she sent Zach's letters back unopened. She made her decision. She thinks Grace is better off without her."
"You sound as if you disagree."
"I've always disagreed. You know that."
Grace looked up.
"Did you just spell my name, Papa?"
Miles smiled tightly at his granddaughter.
"I was testing you. Good job, Poppet."
Grace beamed at him.
"I'm the best speller in my class. I'm getting a trophy for it."
"She's not coming back, Jude," Miles said softly, leaning down to kiss her forehead. "All of that is behind us."
Grace loved hospitals. They were grown-up places, and because her papa was a surgeon or something like that, people brought her books and juice boxes and gave her paper and crayons. Sometimes, when one of the doctors wanted to be alone with Nana and Papa, one of the nurses would even take her for a walk through the busy hallways. Her favorite was seeing the newborn babies in the see-through plastic boxes. She loved their tiny pink and blue caps.